On Tech News Today, Amazon unveils new tablets and readers, including one just for kids. Plus, Apple says they won't unlock phones for the police even if they have a warrant. Amazon beats Google in a bidding war for a top-level domain, and Egypt gets hardcore about internet surveillance. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, September 18th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and Jason Howell is right there in the saddle.
All sneaky behind all these buttons. How's it going?
It's going great. Jason and I have been hatching our scheme for coverage during the holiday season. Twit closes down. We pre-record shows. So we've got some exciting stuff planned. It may include eggnog for the Christmas show.
I hope that it does. I mean, it is the holidays.
Yeah. I'm going to see if I have a sweater vest of some kind and with reindeer on it.
If you don't, like I could loan you one. I have like a closet full of sweater vests.
Thank you. Cool. Thank you so much. Right. You should wear those every day. And it's Thursday, and that means we have Elise Hugh, our co-anchor today and every Thursday. How you doing, Elise?
I'm doing great. Hello from Washington, D.C.
So we were all, we in the chat room and Elise and Jason and I were all talking before the show and decided that Elise's middle name should become Danger. So you're gonna change it legally, right?
I guess if it doesn't take too much hassle for me, I don't have a middle name.
We're busy people. Yeah, exactly.
Right. It could be a number. It could be a symbol. It really could be many things.
Well, you really should, because Danger would be my middle name if I had time to change it. Isn't as good of a line as Danger is my middle name. So anyway, just my two cents.
Thanks,
well,
Mike.
Why don't we do the news? What the heck? Amazon unveiled five new ebook readers and tablets yesterday evening, including a $79 touchscreen Kindle reader, a $199 Kindle Voyage device, a $379 Fire HD X 8.9 tablet, a $99 Fire HD 6 tablet, and I think most interestingly, a $149 Fire HD tablet just for children. Lance Ulanoff is the editor at large of Mashable. Nat Garin is the commissioning editor at The Next Web, and Dieter Bonn is executive editor at The Verge. Welcome to all three of you.
Thanks for having me.
Now let's start with you, Lance. What's new about the ebook readers?
So they managed to suck an ounce out of the weight of the current Kindle. So the Kindle Voyage, I guess it's built for a trip, is like 6.3 ounces, and you know, it's an e-ink display, you know, which means it's not backlit. It's higher resolution than ever, like 300 pixels per inch or something to that effect. It's super crisp, super white. Always keep in mind, though, that, you know, the e-ink technology is not made by Amazon. They license it. They get it from e-ink. And in fact, I'm guessing that at some point Barnes & Noble will probably come out with an e-reader that will have the same kind of screen in it. But it is, you know, super light and thin, and it's got more features for Goodreads, and it's got something called, I believe, WordWise, I think is the name of it, which actually puts definitions for words in the text. So little plain English definitions over the text when you're reading. Unfortunately, you can turn that thing down. It's also a pretty expensive e-reader. It's $199.
Yeah, that is pretty pricey considering what it is you're getting. And these essentially act as bookends to the Paperwhite, right? There's a Paperwhite that's right in between.
It's still
this.
In there.
Yeah,
right.
So there are three now main e-book readers from Kindle, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And this is a nice selection. Now, clearly one of the most interesting things about this is the low cost of the low end version of this. It seems to me that a lot of people are going to be going for that. Now, these are advertising subsidized, right?
Yeah. Usually for the lowest price, you get the little, you know, like the when the, it's in sleep state, you get the advertisement. But let me just say something about the $79 model. Do not look at that next to the Voyage. Don't even look at that next to the Paperwhite, because it's kind of ugly. Uh-huh. It's fat. It doesn't have nearly as high a resolution. It doesn't have the touch. It has a touchscreen, but not the same kind of touchscreen. It actually uses infrared. So it's a little bit different. I mean, it's if you're looking for a super low-cost device, fantastic. But I think that if you happen to see the Voyage next to it, you're going to be, you know, like, well, if I can't afford that, at least maybe I can get the Paperwhite. Which, by the way, I own a Paperwhite, and that's a great device. I didn't actually think they could get brighter and sharper, but they have. And one thing I wanted to mention is Amazon said to us that their end goal for digital readers is paper.
Huh.
So think of the future where someday, probably not tomorrow, you will have something that's like a piece of paper but will be interactive, will be refreshable.
Nat Garen, let me just have you jump in and talk to us a little bit about what's offered for kids and families, since that was part of the big slew of announcements this week.
Yeah, sure. So with the new announcements, they announced the Fire HD 6 and 7. And they've also bundled it in a way where they call it the kids edition, which kind of comes with, you know, a lot of offering for families with young children and parents who want to monitor what their kids are kind of interacting with on the tablet. So for $149 for the 6-inch edition, you get the soft cover, which is, you know, life-proof. And they also have a simplified OS, just easy for kids to use. And parents can also set usage control, as in, you know, how many minutes a day they want their kids to watch a movie or read a book, or whether they should get through 30 minutes of educational content first before they can play games. So, and it also comes with Free Time Unlimited for a year, which allows kids to interact with a slew of content, such as books, games, shows, and just really kid-friendly stuff. And all of this comes for basically an extra $50, in, as opposed to if you bought just the HD 6 on its own. So they're really trying to incentivize parents to buy the bundled package so that kids can really enjoy the tablet. Just, you know, I think kids these days are kind of born into the touchscreen era. So really teaching kids to kind of interact with technology in a responsible way is a smart move on Amazon's part, and I think the pricing strategy should work quite well.
Now, Dieter, you wrote a detailed feature and review on the Kids Edition, and you seemed really impressed with it. Is this something you would recommend to parents?
So I can't quite recommend it because I haven't given it a full review yet. I haven't spent a ton of time with it. But I will say that Amazon is way ahead of everybody else when it comes to optimizing their operating system for parents and for kids. This is the first kids tablet that isn't like insulting to kids. There's just lots of little clever features in there. Like when a kid uses the camera, it uploads all of the pictures a kid takes to the parents' cloud. And then the parents can decide whether or not they want to share those photos, so you can spy on your kids that way. The other kind of crazy thing about this kids edition is for that $50 premium, you get a 2-year, no questions asked, complete warranty where they will replace it as long as you send the broken one back. And I mean, when I talked to Amazon, I said, you know, so is this like a dollar bill where as long as I send back 51%, you'll still send me a replacement? And they basically said, yeah, like you can just smash the thing however you want and they'll send it back to you. And Amazon actually doesn't think it's that smashable. It's a relatively durable tablet, especially when you compare it to other Android tablets at that, you know, $100, $150 price range.
Yeah, and it comes with a special case. And I imagine that a big part of Amazon's strategy with this sort of offering is that they want to hook kids into the Amazon ecosystem, get them owning content online, and they'll essentially have a customer for life, theoretically, I guess. Do you find that that strategy is a good thing for families and kids, or is it kind of a little bit predatory to go after children?
I suppose it's a little bit predatory, although it's hard to blame Amazon for, you know, providing something like Free Time that has just a ton of great kids content. One of the things they do is they actually do not put advertising on the Kids Edition, and they even go so far as to put really granular rules on in-app purchasing, and they also don't allow ads inside apps on the Kids Edition. So they've really thought through what makes a tablet safe for a relatively young child. You know, Amazon's content ecosystem, it's not quite the sort of thing that I would want to live in entirely. But what I learned from their event yesterday is they're not going away. They're gonna keep making these things, and this isn't some flash in the pan thing. They are planning for the long haul.
By the way, I did ask Amazon specifically about in-app purchases, because when I've talked to parents who have either iPhones or iPads, they're often complaining that their kids have run up $500 bills based on in-app purchases. So they, you know, the parents have kind of given permission, yes, you can download this app, and they know what's going on there. But what they don't realize is that for levels they're buying. So Amazon said, for the apps in this free time area, what they do is they preload as many levels as they think are really necessary to try and avoid that sort of, you know, click to buy to up, you know, to sort of go up to the next level. You know, I would, of course, like to see how that works in practice.
Now, Lance, I promised to get you out of here at 1:15 p.m. Eastern time, and I have failed to do that already. But let me ask you one really quick question. I apologize for that. And the question is essentially, now you cover the whole breadth of technology. You cover all kinds of devices. You cover all the big devices, the Android devices, everything. So Amazon enters into this world with ebook readers and Android tablets, a forked version of Android, but nevertheless, it's Android. How would you advise people who are just trying to figure out, you know, what sort of Android tablet should I have, or should I go with a phablet, or should I go with a big iPhone, or should I have a separate ebook reader? I mean, how do you make that choice nowadays with so many phablets and small tablets and ebook readers? What's your general advice for how to approach that problem?
Well, I would say, first of all, I don't look at e-readers as sort of, oh, if you already have a tablet, why would you get that? Just because, for the simple fact of battery life, you know, reading is a sort of a different kind of experience. When you're reading a novel, you're reading a long book, you know, you really don't want to think about, oh, you know, I didn't charge yesterday. You know, you want it to be like just picked up a book. And that's, unfortunately, with your iPhone, your Android device, your tablets, at some level, that's not going to happen. So I do believe in having multiple devices. When it comes to what to choose, I mean, because I've been doing this same thing for years, because there's so many variables, I always ask people, I say, step back, and how much do you want to spend? Because that's your box. You know, no matter what, your budget is the box you have to stuff everything into. And then it's sort of, well, can I get that feature? You know, and then you have your list of features you want, and then who you're getting it for. So there's a whole bunch of different factors at play. When it comes down to whether it's the Android ecosystem or the iOS ecosystem, you know, I've ended up coming to find that devices like the Kindle Fire, which have a managed app world, you know, where you're not just kind of in Google Play, where I feel like it's still not as perfectly controlled as it could be, is a benefit, mainly because all the apps you need are pretty much there, you know, and usually if something grows popular enough, it ends up within there, you know, there is a version for it. So it's not a great answer, because there is no simple answer for this. I think it's great we have a lot of choices. I would always recommend, though you're starting with the box of price, don't buy simply based on price. There's right now a $99 Kindle Fire HD, right? It's a 6-inch device. That's a half inch larger than the new iPhone 6 Plus.
And smaller than some other phablets.
Right. So, you know, remember what you're getting, you know, think about the screen size. So, you know, Mike, there are just so many factors at play here. I love the iPad mini. I love the Kindle Paperwhite. I use the thing that works best for me and makes me happiest.
So I have one last question, and that is for Nat. Can you just quickly tell us about the page press feature, the new page turning technology that Amazon rolled out?
Oh, sure. So basically, in the bezel of the new Kindle Voyage, there's a two-sided haptic sensors built in. So all you have to do is just kind of hold it the way you normally would an e-reader. And all you have to do is just kind of gently press, and you'll get a haptic feedback, which is a vibration to kind of let you know, you know, when you touch on a touch screen, you get that vibration when you click on something that your action has been registered. So I think that's really smart, because instead of just kind of going back to the screen to flip through the pages, all you have to do is just leave your thumb where it is and just press it to move on to the next page or chapters. And it's a really small but, you know, big technological feature that I think does make a difference. Like, it saves a lot of time. It's really convenient. You don't have to, you know, flip your hands around to kind of navigate through your book. And I think it's really smart designed, and it's really neat. I'm excited to write it out a little more.
Well, Lance Ulanoff is at Lance Ulanoff on Twitter, and you can also find him at lanceulanoff.com. He's already left us here, and I also want to thank Nat Guerin at thenextweb.com, and you can follow her on Twitter at Nat Guerin, NattGarun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
All right, and Dieter Bonn is at TheVerge.com, and you can find him on Twitter at Backlon. Thank you, Dieter.
Thanks much.
All right. Well, in just a second, we're going to go on with additional news that will blow your mind. But first, I want to tell you about a service that will blow your mind. ShareFile by Citrix is an awesome way to send files on the Internet. We have somebody in the audience here, experts on security, and they deal with security all the time. They will, I'm sure, would confirm that you don't want to send files of any sort of sensitive nature just over the Internet as an attachment to email. It's a terrible idea, right? I mean, that's a horrible idea because email is pretty easily hackable, and then it tends to linger on people's email address. You lose control of it because it's sitting, a copy of that file is sitting on their server somewhere, and you have no control over that. If you want control over the files, you have to use Citrix ShareFile, because the way that works is you upload your file to a secure server and then you send a link to that file. You can determine who gets to download it, how many times they get to download it, and for how long they get to download it, 3 days, a week, an hour, whatever it is you want, and then you can be notified if you choose for when they downloaded it. You get total control after you've sent the file, and that is the way to go with files that are large, files that are sensitive or personal, files that have your financial information, any file. Don't send attachments over the Internet to email. I mean, it's just a terrible idea. Use Citrix ShareFile. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial. No obligations. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter TNT. Remember that, ShareFile.com, and enter TNT. Well, Elise, it looks like Apple is not going to play ball with the police anymore.
It says it's not. That's right. Apple is no longer unlocking iPhones and iPads in response to government requests, including search warrants. That's as it rolls out its new iOS 8. Apple says it won't even be technically feasible for it to bypass user passcodes. So this is a blow for police and a win for privacy advocates. ACLU is praising this decision. But of course, there's already forensic experts saying that there are workarounds for police to sort of find other ways to get the data off your phones. And this doesn't protect data in the cloud, which has been so controversial lately.
You know, it's a good idea, I think, for Apple to put themselves as the secure company, the company that's going to stand up for the user against all this invasive surveillance and police action that everybody's freaked out about. People should be freaked out about this stuff, and it is the right position. But I wonder, you know, what happens when they confront China or Russia and say, oh, we're not going to do any of this stuff. You know, they're still facing approval, as we're going to see later on in the show, for the iPhones to ship in China. You know, maybe China doesn't want people to be able to send encrypted messages that are uncrackable or unhackable or whatever by the police. So I wonder if this is going to stand up internationally.
Yeah, this amounts to essentially a plausible deniability by Apple, right? Because they can not only get the marketing win by saying, hey, we're standing up to these government requests, but also if we do get search warrants and requests for data, then we can say we just can't access it because they've engineered a way to say that. They're saying, like, the way we're encrypting phones that are running iOS 8 will just make it impossible. And so it protects them in some ways, but it raises a lot of questions for their bottom line, like you mentioned, globally, as they try to expand in markets in the BRIC nations.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting turn of events, and this sort of comes on the heels of Tim Cook's TV interview that we talked about in a previous show this week, where he was bragging about security and how they don't turn over a user data to anyone. They don't harvest it. They don't need to harvest it. That's not entirely true, it turns out, but it's more true than it is for Google and Facebook and other companies that he was implicitly slamming in that interview. So, you know, it sounds like Apple's really serious about marketing themselves as the secure, safe place for your data, which is, you know, it's a good marketing ploy. I wish them luck with that, and I hope that at least some of what they're saying is true. Well, Amazon.com paid $4.6 million to own the .buy top-level domain, outbidding Google even, according to an exclusive on the domain name Wire site. And a company called .tech bought the what else .tech top-level domain for an incredible $6.7 million. I talked to Andrew Alleman, the publisher of the domain name Wire site and the author of this exclusive, this morning.
So what does it mean to buy a top-level domain? Does it mean that competitors can be excluded from using it?
In some ways, yes. The rules, if you get a top-level domain, for example, Amazon originally wanted to keep them closed where it would be the only one who would be able to use that. But some people in the community didn't like that and pushed back. So now you have to open it up and allow other people to register domain names underneath it at the second level. But there's some loopholes there, right? So Amazon, for example, can charge whatever it wants for you to register something .buy. So it could set the price at, say, $1 million, and then it effectively would exclude other companies from using it.
And could they charge different amounts for different companies? For example, could they charge Billy Bob's online store $10 and charge Google $1 billion?
Well, they're allowed to charge different amounts for different domain names. I think they would get a lot of heat in a hurry if they did it based on the size of the company. I'm sure there's some sort of rule against that. But they could say that certain better domains cost more. But there's also a way for trademark holders to get their domain names in a what's called a sunrise period at the beginning. But there's also not a price restriction on that. So effectively, if Amazon wanted to exclude other people from registering .buy domain names, the way the contract's written, I believe they could. Whether or not they would, I think maybe they've decided that they will let others get in on it. But it'll be really interesting to see what Amazon ends up doing, since their original plan was to just allow Amazon and its affiliate, its other companies, to register domain names underneath it.
What are the advantages for companies like Amazon to have a top-level domain?
It's a question that remains to be seen. I think what some people are advocating is that they can use domains for branding purposes. .buy is a great example with Amazon. Maybe there's a way to integrate .buy domain names into their Fire Phone, technically, to lead people to a product more quickly than going to Amazon.com and typing something else in. A lot of companies have actually applied for their brand name. So Google will have .google, for example. Amazon wants to do that. They want to own .amazon, and you could see how they could do certain branding things around that, like buy.amazon or go-to.amazon. They've actually run into an issue with the Amazonian region and the governments there that have objected to that. But from a benefit standpoint, a lot of people think that brands could better brand themselves and market rather than using their existing .com underneath a .brand domain name.
And who are some of the other bidders for these domains?
Well, when you look at other applicants, for example, .buy, which Amazon won for about $4.6 million, they were competing against Google, and they were also competing against a couple applicants, companies that were set up strictly to bid on these domain names. For example, there's a company out of Seattle called Donuts that applied for several hundred of these domain names and are actually running some already. And then Famous Four Media, which is another applicant that applied for a lot of them, was competing against them. And so, and then there are other large companies. Most of the large companies and brands you can think about applied for domain names that matched their brands. Rarely was it a generic domain name like .app or .blog.
All right, Andrew Alleman, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll be watching this, but it's an interesting turn of events, and there are apparently a lot of companies that think they're going to make a lot of money off of these new top-level domains. So we'll see how that goes. Andrew Alleman is at domainnamewire.com, and you can follow him and his site at domainnamewire on Twitter. Well, Elise, it looks like Egypt is getting super serious about surveillance.
Yeah, more news sort of on the global front. It's beginning surveilling. The Egyptian government is beginning to surveil citizens, Facebook, Twitter, Skype communications, and beyond that, possibly other participation on apps like Grindr. This is unprecedented, according to BuzzFeed, which is reporting this story. Egypt has hired the sister company of an American firm to monitor Egyptian citizens' communications. It is called Blue Coat. and it's U.S.-based. So a U.S. firm is helping with this kind of mass surveillance of citizen communications.
Yeah, and it's a horrible turn of events. The officials said that they are going to be looking for things like debauchery and homosexual acts. And they're going to be hunting down, people who are talking about engaging in debauchery and homosexual acts.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible turn of events. You know, and there's also a political dimension to this. When the Uganda is actually prosecuting people for homosexual acts and homosexual activity and putting them in jail for life. And it became a political issue for the United States going after that country and sort of withholding funding and stuff. Of course, Egypt gets a ton of money from the United States for military support going back all the way to the Camp David Accords in the 70s. And so, this should be a political issue that they're actually using this kind of surveillance and this kind of technology for this purpose.
It also raises a lot of corporate responsibility questions, right, Mike? I mean, these are American firms that are essentially helping the government in rounding up its own citizens, not just surveilling them, but possibly rounding them up for prosecution based on what government leaders consider to be debaucherous acts. And so the corporations that are helping out with this and getting the multimillion dollar contracts have some moral questions, I think, to ask themselves on these issues.
They absolutely do. And of course, this story is not going to end here. We're going to continue to follow it and see what Egypt actually does with this surveillance technology. But once again, this reminds me of Turkey, where you had these once, very kind of secularized, largely Muslim countries that are becoming more kind of radicalized and toward Muslim extremism and using technology to do it. So
that we make often.
Absolutely. And the same is true in China and all over the world. Whenever there's hardcore surveillance and the use of technology for in the case of China to hunt down dissidents and so on, it's always American companies aiding and abetting this sort of activity. And it kind of makes you wonder. And those of us who are customers of those companies may want to know about that. So we're going to continue to report on this story and ones like it as we go forward. Well, in just a second, we're going to have a couple of more follow-ups about Apple's big announcement. So much news coming out of Apple this month. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Anybody who knows me knows that I love the Squarespace. I love me some Squarespace because it is a great site that enables you to make a beautiful website, maintain a beautiful website, a website that will never go down, no matter how much traffic you can throw at it. So throw as much traffic as you can at it. Be as popular as you want. And it'll help you to be popular because the designs are so beautiful. Now, why would you want your own website? Well, there are a million reasons, but one of them is that you can forward your own personal brand. You can assert yourself as a brand. If you work for a company back in the old days, back in the 50s, you were an IBM employee. Your identity. You were an IBM person. But now you are the brand. It's a new world. And in the world of social media, you are the brand. So you should have a website to talk about your brand, to link to all your social networks, your resume, the work you've done, the history. Let people get to know you online with your own personal Squarespace website. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with, and then you can modify those. It's super easy to do. They have a logo creator tool that's really easy to create your own logo, even if you have no design experience at all. And if you switch and you have a blog somewhere else, you can import your blog from WordPress, Blogger, Tumblr, and other blogging platforms. And I love the fact that if you have a blog on Squarespace, you can post by email. Just send an email to your blog, and it becomes a blog post. It's fantastic. I love that that service, and it's really rare. So what are you waiting for? Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and that will get you 10% off the extremely low price that already is offered, and to show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank them so much for their support of the show. We told you this week that the Chinese government's delaying the approval of the Apple iPhone 6 phones in China. Now the government has announced that Apple's gained two approvals, which is nice, but it still needs to get a network access license before it can sell the phones in China. So they're still holding them up. They can't sell the millions and millions and millions of phones that got sitting there ready to go. Also, Apple said that a HealthKit bug delayed the release of that platform with yesterday's iOS 8 download. HealthKit is Apple's program for collecting health data from third-party apps and putting them into a single location. Apple also pulled some HealthKit-supporting apps from the App Store. Dropbox and Google today announced a new research project called Simply Secure, which is designed to make two-factor authentication easier, and it can't possibly come too soon because right now two-factor authentication isn't easy enough, and that's why a lot of people don't use it. And in other news, iOS 8 users are grappling with a new auto-predict feature that suggests how you might finish your sentences. It's just like autocomplete in Google search. Now one user's created a Twitter account filled with tweets suggested by auto-predict, and they are horrible. For example, type in the word eat, and you get eat a whole bunch of people. And that is a
I love tweet. This Twitter feed.
Isn't that
it's
great?
It's so great.
Yeah, I subscribed immediately. I followed this because it's just hilarious. Another gem here is, yes, sir, I have a great way to get my hopelessness up to date. Why would that be an auto? Like, why? I mean, isn't it supposed to be the most? No, hey, Pop-Tarts aren't even in my life. Like, who is typing this in such great numbers that it like that's the suggestion?
I'm sure there's at least one person that hey, Pop-Tarts aren't even in my life applies to. That one person is not me, by the way.
And what is Pop-Tarts code for?
Yeah, what are they really saying
the
here?
Code, right?
Yeah, whatever it is, it's not in their life.
Well, anymore.
Our TNT fan of the day is William Hart in Newton, Connecticut, who posted this picture on Google Plus. Hey, it's Catter Day every day here on Tech News Today. Look at that. Wow.
That cat does not care about you, Mike.
He is completely,
interested.
No, not at all.
There's a mouse that he's looking at.
Now, probably. If I were co-hosting with you, since cheese. Danger is my middle name.
That's right. The cat would be perking up.
The cat would
up.
Be more interested,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. Well, how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup, post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag TechNewsToday, and we'll find it. And, of course, you can search that hashtag yourself to find all that stuff. That is the Tech News Today. Elise Danger Hugh, thank you so much for joining us today.
So glad
Thursday.
To be here. You can find me on Twitter at Elise, WHO, no middle name.
And also on NPR.org.
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much, Elise.
Thank you.
Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS. Subscribe on your mobile device. Subscribe on your desktop. Just keep Tech News Today coming in your direction. You can choose your favorite way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And you can send us your thoughts and opinions, and we want to hear them. You can send us email at tnt@twit.tv. You can call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.